Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, this is my first chance to talk to you since Thanksgiving, since Penn State's big win over Michigan State, since you decided to turn your hair purple. The whole world has changed since I last saw you.
I'm telling you, a whole lot going on in the world of Ironhead here. Yeah, it's my kiddo raised $5,000 for in popcorn sales for his Cub Scout pack, and we had agreed if he hit that ridiculous high goal that he would be able to dye my hair any color he wanted for a week, and he chose pink, but with my hair color it came out purplish. And then he gets to cut my hair this weekend any way he wants, and truthfully I'm hoping for bald at this point, because bald beats some of the crazy designs that he could come up with, but he seems to be leaning bald, so I'm okay with that overall heading into the weekend. And yeah, the Nittany Lion football team, a good way to close the season. And Jim, I think there was a lot of encouraging things coming out of that game in terms of the way the offense in particular seem to be figuring things out and gelling. I like the fact that who knew you could use Bo Pribula in that way, and you know, exploit some of his talents. Who knew you could use the middle of the field? I really did think overall it was just a much better, more comprehensive game plan. And listen, I get it's Michigan State that Penn State defeated. There are some things you can do and look good against Michigan State that you might not be able to do and look nearly as good against an Ohio State or a Michigan. But boy, do I feel like if that offensive attack was in place, Penn State would have at least had a much better chance to win one or both of those games earlier in the season.
Well, a couple things, Jeff. First of all, what is wrong with the bald look? Okay, that's my number one comment.
Not a thing. It'll be my tribute to Cal Sanderson.
Very good. I respect that. And, you know, number two, talking about the Michigan State game and that performance on offense, and I just thought of this. You remember a year ago, the defense was good. It was good last year. It was good in 22. But late in the year, it seemed to just put it together. It gelled, put it together, and sure enough, it carried over to this season with the defense. Is it just wishful thinking for me to say, you know what, maybe this was the offense turning the corner late in the season, and I would like to see that kind of performance again in a bowl game, but is it possible that's the corner turning game for the offense also?
It's possible. There's just so many variables there, Jim, in terms of looking at next season, that I'm not willing to quite say that that is what we're going to see, but I think there's certainly that potential. I think obviously part of it is going to be, all right, who is the offensive coordinator that comes in, and what does that look like? I also think it's going to be really interesting, Jim, to see who all does come back next year, in particular on the offensive side of the football. You know, is Bo Pribula good with his situation here at Penn State, or is he wanting to, you know, test his starting chops somewhere else? And again, I think part of this is going to be the importance of the communication process in the offseason. And the one thing I think James Franklin has been really good about is being upfront and honest with his players. And I think James Franklin knows that Bo Pribula has a chance to be a special part of this offense. And I'd love to be in on that conversation just for the sake of listening to it and both of their thoughts about how this might look next season. But, you know, assuming he comes back and obviously Drew Aller comes back and they both take another step in their progression, I think that's a heck of a place to start for your football team next year. And I think this offensive line has a chance to be really good next year again. I also think, like, Tyler Warren, to me, it would be a big benefit for him. Certainly, it'd be a huge benefit for the program if he comes back for another year. But I think it makes sense for him to come back. I think that is one guy that can really help his draft stock by returning for another year and having what I think would be a tremendously productive year if he does come back next season for himself to maybe take a couple of significant steps up the draft board next year. And then, you know, what does that receiving core look like? Does Keandre Lambert-Smith come back? And does Penn State go to the transfer portal? Do they get some guys that can make an immediate impact through the recruiting process? So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts there for the offense, but I was really encouraged, Jim. I mean, that really is the offense I wanted to see all season long in that Michigan State game in terms of the way they were running the ball, the mix that you had, getting Bo Pribula in there. It felt like everything that, again, I thought we would see against Ohio State, we did see finally against Michigan State. And, you know, I hope we do see more of it in the bowl game, and it does give you a taste of what next season is going to look like. I think it certainly gave you an idea of what it can be next season. I just think, again, there's a lot of things still that need to come together here to have a more definitive picture of what this offense can be next year. But I don't think there's any question Penn State can take another big step on offense next year. And I think they won't slip that much defensively. So, I mean, I think next year, and I know Penn State fans are going to be, all right, how many times are we going to talk about next year is the year? I really do think next year could be the year. And yes, I thought this year could be the year. But I don't see any reason to not think that this team could be something really special again next season.
Well, Jeff, I don't think the premise that this year could have been, you know, a special year was inaccurate. You go into those Michigan-Ohio State games, the offense, both games played about as bad as you possibly could, and they're, you know, one score behind in both those games, Jeff.
Yeah, and Jim, you know, the one thing I think we tend to, all sports fans or even media folks, tend to get myopic with their vision, and it's like, hey, you're focused on the team you're covering. But when you take a step back, Jim, as you said, Penn State was competitive in both games. I don't think there is another team, and if you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's another team that has faced two top seven opponents to this point in the season. Penn State was competitive in both games. And I know the rest of the schedule people are going to look at, and you know, Iowa obviously was a good win at home, but they're going to look at the rest of the schedule and say, well, you didn't really play any other powerhouse programs. And it's like, well, two things. One, that's fair, didn't, but what other team is playing three top 10 opponents throughout the course of the season? That the answer is that there isn't one. It doesn't happen. And two, and I think this is going under the radar, especially within the Penn State fandom. Yes, Penn State went 10-2, but they dominated, with the exception of the Indiana game, all of the teams they were supposed to dominate. Now, I'm not saying it was four quarters of perfect football. Certainly, you look at the first half against Illinois or the first half against Northwestern. But at the end of the day, Penn State covered and won comfortably in the games they were expected to win comfortably in. That is not something that is happening on a regular basis with just about every other program in the country. There are games where, you know, they are either losing unexpectedly or certainly having very competitive games against teams that make you scratch your head about how that happened. I do think in more ways than we're giving James Franklin and this program credit for, they have turned a corner, to use your term about the offense, with this season's results It's back-to-back seasons now, Jim, that Penn State has not lost a game to a team that it wasn't expected to lose against. That was not the case for James Franklin's first 7 or 8 years here. There was always at least a game where you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, how did Penn State lose that game? Like, they were clearly the better team. I get that we're going to go back and Ohio State and Michigan and why did you lose that game? But it's not, oh my gosh, how could you lose to an Ohio State or a Michigan? They're Ohio State and Michigan. It's like asking an SEC team, how did you lose to Alabama or Georgia? Well, they're Alabama and Georgia. You're losing to great elite teams. Penn State wants to be elite. They're not elite. I get it. But they are so definitively at the top of that second tier right now and knocking on the door. And I just think eventually, not soon enough for Penn State fans' taste, but I think eventually they do come crashing through and break into that elite status. And yes, I thought it would be this year. I'm disappointed it wasn't this year. I do think it could be next year. I'll be disappointed if it's not next year. But they are right there, and there are a lot of teams that are in worse places than knocking on the door of being elite in college football.
On our episode with Andy Shea, we do something called Ask Andy, where our listeners are able to send in a question. And I want to share with you a question one of our listeners sent in, which is this. If Penn State would have won one of those two games, however, how competitive would they have been with those playoff teams, say a Washington or a Georgia or a Florida State?
Yeah, I think the resume would stack up very well, Jim, especially if the win was, well, either way, I guess, because you'd either have a great road win or another good home win against a team that went on and won the rest of its game. So, yeah, either way, I think the resume stacks up very well, in large part because of that Iowa shutout. Again, 31-0. It wasn't just that Penn State won the game. 31-0 against a team that went 10-2. And by the way, how different would Iowa look right now if not for a fair catch call that was not a fair catch call? I mean, I don't know anybody. I mean, I really don't. I haven't talked to anybody that's like, no, I think they got that right. I mean, it was clearly not a fair catch call. Well, if Iowa wins that game, and they win that game if that call isn't made, how different is that perception too? That's an 11-1 Iowa team that is also then in the conversation.
I want to pick up this conversation, Jeff, when we get back for quarter number two. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T. Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State football. And Jeff, when we finished up quarter number one, we were talking about, you know, that old if, what if, you know, if Penn State had snuck into the playoffs, beating one of those two teams, Michigan, Ohio State, I think they would have gotten the tiebreaker to go to the Big Ten championship game, rematch with Iowa. And the question was, how competitive could they be with the playoff teams? I think in other years, I don't think your answer would be the same as far as being competitive with some of those Georgia teams and Alabama teams. Those teams are not the same Georgia and Alabama. And speaking of which, you know, and how circumstances go, Alabama could still be in the playoffs if they beat Georgia. That could still happen. And they probably had the miracle of miracles to get past Auburn a week ago, Jeff.
Yeah, I will say, I think it is a nightmare scenario for the playoff committee if Alabama does beat Georgia. There's obviously a lot of things that could happen that could cause chaos. I think it's going to largely go chalk. In fact, I think it's entirely going to go chalk, and that the top four will remain the same and will win their conference championship games. Obviously, there's a lot of things that could happen. Oregon, Washington, I think, is the most dicey there, at least on paper. But I think if Alabama beats Georgia, it is going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds, Jim, because you're going to have a Texas team that's sitting there that has not just a win over Alabama, a decisive win over Alabama there. And I get it was early in the season, but I mean, it's a head-to-head matchup. If the other teams all win out, the other top four, meaning Florida State wins out, defeats Louisville, Michigan takes care of Iowa, which is going to happen, and Washington beats Oregon, then you have the committee stuck with the, I think, untenable position of either we keep the SEC out altogether in the final year of the four-team playoff, the SEC, which has dominated the college football playoffs, and which even this year, while the SEC, I think most would acknowledge, is down a little bit, is still with the Big Ten, one of the two premier football conferences in the country. All due respect to the Pac-12 in its final year, and it's been a great run this season for the Pac-12. But you either leave them out, or you say, in essence, a head-to-head meeting between Texas and Alabama doesn't matter, and you leave a Texas team that clearly has a rightful case to be made out of the playoffs. I think that is the worst case scenario for the college football playoff committee. As far as Penn State is concerned, Jim, yeah, do I think head-to-head on a neutral field, Penn State has a real shot against any of those teams? I do. I think Penn State, that defense is good enough. And we saw it with the Michigan and Ohio State on days where the offense was not providing much. The defense did give Penn State an opportunity and kept them in both of those games. And yeah, I don't think there is, you know, Georgia's playing very well, but they're not heads and shoulders above where the rest of the country or Penn State is. As you rightfully pointed out, I mean, there were some years there where Alabama and Clemson or Georgia were just, you know, you had one or two teams that were just clearly on another plane. I don't think that's the case this year. I really don't. I think there's 7 to 10 teams that are all pretty comparable and on any given day are capable of knocking each other off. And if we had the 12-team, you know, I understand we don't, but if we had the 12-team playoff this year, boy, would it be a fun watch. And I think there's a lot of opportunities there for upsets if that playoff format was in existence this year.
Well, it wouldn't take much. An Oregon win over Washington. And by the way, I don't know if you saw the spread on that game. Oregon is favored by 9.5 points, Jeff.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm not surprised Oregon's favored. I am shocked that it's that much. Because the one thing with Washington, Jim, is, I mean, that team knows how to win. I made the comparison on another show earlier this week. To me, Washington is kind of comparable to the Philadelphia Eagles, where it's not, you don't look at them and with anything. I mean, Penix obviously is having a great season, but I don't think you look at any element of Washington and you're like, man, that is just, they are heads and shoulders above everybody else at doing that. But they just do everything well, and there's a confidence that just comes from winning and winning consistently. And you just know the Philadelphia Eagles are going to pull it out at the end of the day when you watch them. And I get the same feeling watching Washington. And again, Oregon is obviously a great team. And I know many folks that watched the Washington-Oregon game felt that Oregon, even that day, really was the better team. But I just think Washington's going to rally around this point spread. again, I thought Oregon would be favored, but I really thought like maybe 3-4 points, maybe. That point spread is just incredible to me, given, again, what Washington has done week in and week out, and the confidence that I think that team now exudes.
Well, I liked your comparison to the Eagles. As an Eagles guy, Jeff, I look at Jalen Hurts and say he's a winner as a quarterback, yep. Okay? And I think Michael Penix, that's the way I look at him. And if you're a Penn State fan, do I need to remind you what happened a couple of years ago when he was the Indiana quarterback? And it was just out and out. Michael Penix carried that team to that win. Well, and Jim, that's the kind of guy he is.
Well, and he came very close to getting a 2-point conversion that would have won that game for them. He almost got into the end zone on that. I don't know if you remember that.
I do recall that. I do recall that play, as I'm sure, you know, most of our listeners recall it. And I think, you know, Michael Penix will give you a chance to win many games. And I know I'm sort of going off tangent talking about some of the games from last week. But if you saw in a tie game from their own 29-yard line, Washington going for it on fourth down, and I don't know if you saw the interview with the coach afterwards, who was getting all kinds of kudos from the interviewer. Coach, what an incredible call. Fantastic. And his answer was, you know what? It was up to Michael Penix at the line of scrimmage to decide what we do. He made that call. He could have handed it off, gone right up the middle. He was the one who made that decision. That's a coach, number one, with lots of guts, but it's also a coach who has a lot of confidence in his quarterback, Jeff.
Yep, and how much of it right now, Jim, is when you look at, obviously, the NFL, but now college football, too, it is quarterback play, right? Like, I mean, if you're looking for the single biggest element in the difference between being elite or good, I mean, look at the top four teams, and obviously the questions now with Florida State, with their top guy down, but it's, you have to have elite quarterback play. You need other things obviously too, but an elite quarterback is what allows these teams to really stay in the mix and be true contenders. It's just the nature of the beast these days.
And the follow-up thought on that whole, you know, circus that could, this college football playoff could turn into, Oregon beating Washington was obviously not crazy as a 9-point favorite. Alabama beating Georgia would be no surprise to anybody. You could have Michigan and Florida State undefeated, and then Oregon, Washington, Texas, Alabama, and Georgia all one-loss teams, you know, and again, it's another reason why this 12-team playoff would be the way to go. And you throw in those additional teams. We talk about Penn State. We know them because of, you know, they're the team we follow here. But the argument as a two-loss team with both losses to Michigan and Ohio State, two top six or seven teams, hey, that who else has had to deal with that? You know, you go into, you know, Georgia and Alabama never have to play each other in the regular season. Never. So that doesn't happen in your, you know, that sacred Southeast Conference. So I also give a lot of credit to Michigan, who got trashed for their schedule all year. Remember, they beat two top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Who else has done that, Jeff?
Yeah, nobody. And that's what, you know, you can look at strength of schedule and like most statistics, you can kind of skew it any way you want and make it look the way you want. I think, you know, going back to Penn State for a second, again, Penn State, the 31-0 win over Iowa is a huge win in the overall scheme of things. Again, it's an Iowa team that is one bad call away from being 11-1, with that being the only blemish. And you know, the one-loss teams that you just talked about, Michigan could, or Iowa could be right in that mix with a win over Michigan in the Big Ten championship game. if not for that call. And yeah, and then Penn State's competitive in the other two games. So there's not a lot of other great teams on the schedule. I'll grant you that. But again, you start looking around college football, you tell me the teams that are playing four or five highly ranked teams. Everybody's playing one or two, and then a couple of kind of middle of the road or you know, top 25 type programs. And then the rest are teams that you're expected to beat. And not everybody is even winning those games, let alone winning them convincingly, which Penn State did this year. Again, it wasn't just that Penn State went 10-2. It was that they were competitive in every game, and they won the games, with the exception of Indiana. They won the games they were expected to win comfortably. They did what they were expected to do. And there just are not many teams, when you start looking around and analyzing the games, not many teams that did that throughout the course of the season.
And if you start to look around at some of these teams, you know, Texas, wonderful, great win against Alabama, but they lost to, an Oklahoma team that has multiple losses. And we could go through everybody's schedule. Missouri, who's one place ahead of Penn State, you know, where is their best win? They don't have a top 10 win. Their only top 10 game was against Georgia, who they lost to. So that's all part of that. Jeff, I know you got more to say on this. We'll pick it up in quarter number three. We need to take a break now.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're talking not just Penn State football, but college football in general. And Jeff, we were talking about, you know, the resumes of the different teams and how comparable they are. And the fact is, again, this is just such an argument for that 12-team playoff. Now, the teams that are undefeated, I'll give Michigan a lot of credit for beating two top 10 teams. Give them credit for that. I know Florida State is undefeated, but boy, that resume doesn't scream elite, elite team. Even, you know, Georgia and Alabama, Georgia's undefeated, but if those two teams had played each other in the regular season and Georgia had won, that would make their resume a whole lot better also. So to me, the whole argument here is there's a dozen teams who could play and it would be very competitive. That's the argument for the 12-team playoffs, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, it's why, obviously, I'm glad that it's going that direction next season. I'm obviously disappointed we have to wait another year. But, yeah, I do think when you start, again, looking around at the different schedules, you know, Georgia beat Missouri, and I think Missouri is good, but as you pointed out, I mean, what exactly is the hallmark victory here for Missouri this season? And, you know, they beat Ole Miss, and again, I'd say much the same thing about Ole Miss. I think both Missouri and Mississippi are good teams, and Georgia, by the way, handled both, throttled Mississippi, but and won, solidly, I guess, against Missouri. So, the argument isn't that Georgia isn't deserving. But, yeah, if Georgia and Alabama play every year or played earlier this year, yeah, one of them has, obviously, another blemish, either Georgia's only blemish or Alabama takes a second loss. And it just, it looks different. It feels different. And I don't think Penn State is getting enough credit for the 31-0 win over Iowa, because again, I think that is very comparable to Georgia's most impressive wins of the season, which would be Mississippi to this point, would be Mississippi and Missouri. And, you know, they also had a close game, and I get it's a rivalry game with Georgia Tech, but to me, that's comparable to Penn State's win over Indiana. I mean, I think when you actually sit down and do real side-by-side comparisons, and it's funny how just, again, one little change can really completely alter the perception of something. And something as simple as Alabama and Georgia not playing each other during the regular season, it just alters. Like, they are both placed on a higher plane than one of them would be. Now, obviously, the winner of that game then would have extra credit to their resume at this stage of the season. But Penn State, to me, is not getting enough credit for the 31-0 win over Iowa. And I think part of why they're not getting the credit is that fair catch call. If Iowa's 11-1, and even having not played Ohio State and Michigan, right, we're just looking at them a little differently. And I think we're looking nationally, I think Penn State is being viewed differently as, wow, the only team that beat Iowa was Penn State, and, you know, 31-0 speaks for itself. So at the end of the day, listen, I think Penn State is right there. I know fans are frustrated, and, you know, you go back and read the comments after the Michigan and Ohio State games, and, oh, there's a gulf, and they just can't get – there's not. Now, that's not to say there isn't any separation. Again, Penn State is not there yet, but they are, I think, closer than what fans are willing to concede in the heat of the moment anyway, after those big losses. And listen, I do think, you know, next year you don't have to play Michigan. Now, you have some other big names that pop onto the schedule, and we'll see how that all plays out. But it'll be new teams and very good teams, but I think it's different both for, you know, those schools, you know, for Washington and for Penn State next year. It'll be different getting prepared for an opponent that you aren't used to seeing. You don't know the personnel, and their coaches don't know you the way Michigan and Penn State know each other at this stage of the game. So we'll see how it all plays out. I think Penn State is, again, right there and definitively at the top of that second tier right now. And I just don't think that's as bad of a position as some would lead you to believe. I think it's a pretty good spot to be in.
I think a way to appreciate how that perception happens and the way it works is take a look at Ohio State. 11-1 Ohio State, and you're reading articles about logical replacements for Ryan Day. I mean, they lose to Michigan in a very competitive game, and, you know, it's talked about they're 11-1. They need a new coach. Oh, they also need a new quarterback. They're going to go to the transfer portal for that. As crazy as it is for Penn State fans having an issue with going 10-2, how about the Ohio State fans after an 11-1 season? That is just bonkers.
Perspective is hard to find when it comes to big-time college athletics.
It really is. I'd like to shift gears a little bit, Jeff. Let's get back a little more Penn State-centric. And one of the things I thought was interesting that I wanted to get your take on was as the team struggled through Ohio State and Michigan, it was like, why would Drew Aller ever want to stay on this team? Nick Singleton struggled this year, needs to go elsewhere to really make use of all that talent. And then we have Drew Aller and Nick Singleton. They address those questions, and both of them vehemently said they're not going anywhere. They're both going to be back next year. How significant was that?
I think it's very significant, and I think it is another one of the attributes that we we, the Nittany Nation, if you will, don't give James Franklin enough credit for. And that is, you know, I don't know if you want to call it culture or just, but he has built that trust within that locker room. And I think it's a big deal. I think he's been honest with the kids about where they're at in their progress. I think he's been honest with them when it comes to, hey, would it benefit me to come back for another year or go to the NFL? I don't think he's been self-serving in that regard. I think he's given honest assessments, and I think it's played out that, you know, the advice he's given in consultation with others, obviously, but I think that goes a long way when you're trying to build a team and get new recruits in or be a landing spot for the transfer portal kids, is when you talk to other players on the team, hey, Franklin's telling me this, what's your experience? Well, yeah, my roommate, he told him, you know, he thought he should go to the NFL because he was ready to go last year. And, you know, look at him now, he's having a great career. Or, yeah, he told this guy he should come back, and now look at him. Boy, is he glad he did. And it's not that it always is going to work out too, right? Like, I mean, there's undoubtedly situations where you recommend something and it doesn't pan out for the better of the player. But I think you give the honest assessment with the information you have at the time. And I do think there is a genuine good feeling within that program about where this team is, where the program is, and what the relationship is that the kids have with each other. Again, I'm not around these guys, so I'm not sitting here telling you I know for a fact, but you watch Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton interact with one another. You watch Drew Aller and Bo Pribula. You watch the receivers. You watch the guys in the secondary. It sure feels like there is complete buy-in. And I do think it's a big part. I mean, there's no question Michigan, right, is a tight-knit group. You can despise them. You can not like what has happened. But there is nobody that doubts that those guys are united and are presenting a united front when they take the football field. You have to have that. You have to have talent, but you have to have that, hey, we are all in this together. We trust in our coach. And the fans may not trust in James Franklin, but I think it is very clear that the players do, Jim. And I do think it is a big deal in terms of this program maintaining the stability that it has. And then again, hopefully trying to finally come crashing through and get to that elite status in college football. And I don't think James Franklin gets enough credit for the relationship he has with the players and the trust that he and his staff have built within that locker room.
I believe that's a really good point. And I think it should also be pointed out, when Drew Aller talked, the fear that many Penn State fans had was he was Mike Yurcich's guy. Yurcich scouted him. Yurcich decided to bring him in. And Drew Aller's commitment was to Mike Yurcich. And he was very adamant. His commitment is to James Franklin. And that, I thought, really said a lot. And I wanted to mention earlier, and I forgot, Jeff, early in the show, you talked about Bo Pribula and what his role might be. And I think you could do a comparison with, say, Christian Veilleux, who Drew Aller beat him out for, you know, QB2. For Christian Veilleux, it made sense for him to go. I don't think anybody in Nittany Nation said, oh, bad decision. He made a great decision there. With Bo Pribula, you said you'd like to hear that discussion. I think it's pretty easy and straightforward. Bo, you had a nice role late in the season. Expect that to continue for one more year. Hey, the expectation is Drew Aller is going to move on after that. You're still going to have 2 years of eligibility, and the quarterback position will be open. That would be my discussion with him.
Yeah, and the other component of that discussion, Jim, and I think it's an important one, and I'm assuming, like most of these guys, even those that probably deep down know they don't have a shot at the NFL, right? The goal, if you're coming to a program like Penn State, somewhere in your thought process is I want to be in the NFL. I want to continue playing this sport at the professional level. And listen, I think Bo Pribula has a chance to do exactly that if he comes back and sticks with this at Penn State.
Very good, Jeff. All right, I want to talk bowl game with you when we come back for quarter number four. This is Jim from the Keystone Sports Network. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all our loyal listeners. As we approach the football offseason, a reminder that we will be here year-round talking Penn State football with all your old favorites, Dustin, T. Frank, Andy, and Jeff, along with newcomers Landon and Sean. But that's not all. We plan on bringing you new shows on our podcast format where we take a more in-depth look at not only Penn State football, but also the other Penn State sports. So be sure to download our app, Keystone Sports.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We've been talking on both Penn State football and the bigger picture in the college football world. But Jeff, regular season is over. It's time to talk bowl game for Penn State. As it is right now, ranked 10th, they are just inside that New Year's Six group. They want chalk. They want the favorites to win those conference championship games. They don't want to see Oklahoma State upset Oklahoma State to upset Texas. They don't want Iowa upsetting Michigan. That would change things. So here's what it comes down to for Penn State. Where do you think they're going and where do you want them to go? The options are Fiesta Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Peach Bowl, and there's a handful of potential opponents.
Yeah, if I get to travel, and I don't think I am this year, but if I did, I would like to go either the Fiesta Bowl has just always been wonderful for Penn State. It's obviously a beautiful location and it's just a fun bowl experience for the fans and players alike. And obviously there's been a wonderful relationship there for Penn State over the years, but I'm also intrigued by Atlanta and the Peach Bowl opportunity. I mean, Penn State, my answer is the same actually for both. I would kind of like to see Penn State go to the Peach Bowl just because it's never been. And I think it is the most likely landing spot as we look at the scenario right now. Now, again, as you said, it's going to depend a little bit on how everything plays out here with these championship games. But I think the Peach Bowl is the most likely landing spot for Penn State as well. And I think it's neat for two reasons. One, a different bowl game, which is unusual for Penn State to have an opportunity to go to a bowl that it hasn't been to before. But the other thing, Jim, is Penn State could become, if it goes and wins that game, the only program in the country that would have a New Year's Six bowl win in each of the six bowls. No other program in the country has won all six of those bowl games in the history of the sport. So it would be neat to get that opportunity. And obviously, again, just to have a neat bowl game. But I get the sense that that is also the leader in the clubhouse right now for Penn State's services this year.
Well, we're reading a lot from the head of the Peach Bowl group, and it sounds like he really wants Penn State. And I think that's part of it. The fact I didn't realize that they would be the only team, you know, thank goodness for those years as an independent when they could get to the Orange Bowl, they could get to the Sugar Bowl, then join the Big Ten and get to the Rose Bowl. So that's beneficial. We all know that. And then it comes down to most of the projections I see, or at least a majority have said, Peach Bowl seems to be the where they would go. The potential opponents are Tulane, and quite candidly, nothing against Tulane, but you don't get a lot of points for beating that group of five team that makes it in. The other one is Missouri. And I know people would rather get the sexier name like an Alabama, you know, someone like that, or a Texas. I am fine with Missouri. I like that because it's the Southeast Conference team that, based on schedules and performance, the powers that be said, you know what, we're putting Missouri a little bit ahead of Penn State. So I would like to see them play Missouri.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I mean, I think Alabama obviously gives you the potential for that next hallmark or signature victory for the program or for James Franklin. I don't know that Missouri, even if you win, it gives you quite that. But I'm with you. I think that would be a fine matchup for Penn State. I think it is certainly a very winnable game. I think any of those games are winnable for Penn State. But I also like the fact that part of what I like about bowl games is getting games that you wouldn't otherwise see, right? They just don't get scheduled. And it's been a long time since Penn State played Missouri, obviously well before their SEC days, back when they were in the Big 12. So I think it would be neat from that component. And listen, I do think Missouri is a really good team this year. Obviously have a terrific quarterback, to go back to what we were talking about earlier. So I think there's a lot of neat storylines that would come in that game. And I think when you're looking at the most natural equal pairing on paper, it probably would be Missouri there. Again, one spot ahead of Penn State in the rankings, that feels like a natural matchup for the bowl powers to come up with. So I'd be fine with Missouri. I think it would be an intriguing enough game for the fans that it's like, yeah, no, this is significant. We want to go. We want to see this. And you'll get credit for the win. And, you know, it's not going to ding you horribly if you lose that game, either if you're Penn State. So I do think that seems to be the most likely scenario. I think there's still a lot of things that could play out. But, yeah, if you had to lay money on it right now, I think that is the most likely bowl matchup and destination for Penn State. And I think it's a good one on both counts in terms of the opponent and just the opportunity to play in a different bowl game and to largely have the stage to yourself. I think there's one other game going on at that time, if I'm remembering, that'll overlap a bit. But yeah, that'd be a good opportunity for Penn State.
I think also for Penn State, for the fan base, there are so many Penn State alums throughout the Southeast, where two things: Atlanta is drivable for a lot of them. I mean, you go through the Virginia, the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, there are enough, Penn State grads who could make it there driving. And the second thing is Atlanta is an easy flight for a lot of people, to make it there. So I think Penn State would be well represented fan-wise if that's where they went. So I'm kind of rooting for that also. My question, though, is how important then is it to have a good showing in the bowl game?
So going into it, I think it is important, and I think everybody will tell you that. And then if you lose it, it's like, well, this is extra motivation, and this will just drive us to even greater heights. You always have to spin it the way you can. Listen, I really do think it is important to get that win in the bowl game to try to help set the tone for the next season. Doesn't mean you can't lose a bowl game and go on and have a great season, even a national championship season the following year. I just think it's easier to get in that positive frame of mind when you're in the weight room and training, when your last experience from the last season is a good one. I just think it's easier to get in that that mindset that, okay, now we just need to build on that. I think that's easier to do than coming off of a loss. I just think you're a little grumpier with your overall attitude. Again, at the end of the day, I don't know how much of a difference it really makes in terms of, you know, what the team looks like when the first game opens up next season. I just think getting a win here gets you into, first of all, it gets the fans in a better frame of mind, and it gets a little bit of the pressure off of the, you know, well, you can't win the big one, you can't do this, can't do that. But I think more so, it's just getting the mindset in a positive frame of mind for those off-season workouts. I suspect by the time the summer comes around, win or lose, it's just you're completely focused on the next season. I just think it makes the next few months easier in terms of having the right mindset for the preparation if you win this. And I think, you know, it's going to be a great opportunity for Penn State to get some of the younger guys that are going to be more significant contributors next year. Obviously, additional practice time, but also hopefully some additional game time as well.
Well, I look at it from the fan perspective. I felt a lot better about last offseason after that Rose Bowl against Utah. It was, you know, a nice bowl game. It was against a good team, if not a great team, but a good team, a good Utah team. And they played well, and I thought they got some confidence out of it. Probably more so the fan base got some confidence out of that. I think it would be the same way this year. And on the two different sides of the ball, I think it looks a little different. There might be a few of those defenders who may choose not to come back, which I think will just give the opportunity for some of the younger players to excel and gain confidence. But I'm confident the defense will still show up. And then on the offensive side, if you're Drew Aller and that whole offense, could you build on to that performance against Michigan State? And I think that would be real important, not just for us fans to see it, but for Drew Aller and company to see it, feel it, produce that kind of performance.
Yeah, and as you said, especially if it is against an SEC school, like I do think that carries a little of extra weight in terms of the confidence that can be gained from it. To your point earlier, I mean, if Penn State plays Tulane, you can go out and have a great game. You know, I think the fans will kind of yawn over it. And I don't know that the players, you know, I think they'll appreciate getting a good win. And Tulane is a good team. I just think if you beat a Missouri, it's like, okay, we beat one of the teams that was in the upper echelon of the SEC, not Georgia or Alabama, but in that next tier, which is, you know, quite frankly, where Penn State is in the Big Ten, the next tier behind behind Ohio State and Michigan. But I do think that gives you just an extra shot of confidence heading into the offseason.
I feel that way, too. Here's the question I have for you. Will Manny Diaz be coaching the defense?
That is a really good question, Jim. The Duke job is really intriguing to me. We've been saying for a while that I don't think Manny Diaz is just going to jump at the first opportunity. It's got to be the right fit. I got to tell you, Duke feels like it could be the right fit to me, Jim. I mean, he obviously has experience in the ACC. It's a good school. There's not there's expectations, but it's not crazy pressure like you would face at, say a Miami. I'm worried about it from Penn State's perspective. You know, I would say it's kind of 50-50 right now for me as to whether or not Manny Diaz will be on the sidelines for Penn State in the bowl game.
We might find out that very soon, Jeff. All right, that is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are